You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Now we can make that difference. A lot of great ground.
This is the Gaffer and Hooligan Podcast. Discussions, debates, and opinions on Major League Soccer and the CONCACAF region from a Canadian perspective. Hosted by Kamal Hilton.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the newest addition to the Red Nation Online family of podcasts, the Gaffer and Hooligan. I'm your host, Kamal Hilton, and I'm joined by two of my Red Nation Online colleagues, Ian Clark, co-founder of Red Nation Online, and host of the Toronto FC podcast East Side Stand Up, and also Aaron Nielsen, our resident statistician, a fellow Red Nation Online writer, and founder of ENB Sports. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Doing great, Kamal.
Are you the hooligan?
Yeah.
The gaffer?
No, Kamal's drinking his third beer. He is the hooligan. I'm drinking coffee at this stage. I am the gaffer.
And I'm the performance analysis.
All right, well,
Aaron holds the clipboard.
Before we go into the topics for our first podcast, I'm just going to give a brief overview of what it's all about. Basically, on the Gaffer and Hooligan, we'll be discussing and debating a wide range of topics, issues, and storylines, mainly surrounding MLS and CONCACAF. We also cover other things like NWSL, women's soccer, NASL, and things like that. But the three main elements that we want to strive for on this podcast in particular is to bring the Canadian perspective, because it's something that RNO is known for. And outside of a few isolated places like our friends at Waking the Red or the 11.ca, it's really lacking in the general North American soccer coverage. I think the Canadian perspective needs to be highlighted a little bit more. So that's what we're going to strive to do. The second thing is we want to be real, we want to be raw, and we want to be genuine. There's not going to be any sugarcoating of any issues going on here. MLS, we like the league, we watch the league, we promote it.
Can it get better?
Yeah, we're fans of it, but we also know we're not foolish enough to think that everything's rainbows, sunshine, and unicorns. I mean, there's going to be problems. There's going to be issues. And we're here to discuss them and debate them. And we know MLS likes to give explanations to certain things. Some of them don't really jive. So when that happens, we're going to question those. But I think the third thing and the most important thing is we want this to be interactive. We want you to think of this as something of a virtual soccer pub. One of the big things, one of the main things I think that you get out of soccer discussion is the best thing about it is when you talk to your fellow supporters and your fellow your friends at a pub over a pint of beers. That out of that comes the best conversation. So we kind of want that. So we'll allow you to get in touch with us and share your thoughts on any of the topics we discuss on the show, or if you want to suggest future topics for future shows, you can get contact with us easily. You can contact me directly on Twitter at Kamal Hilton, and we'll come up with some fancy hashtag for that later. I don't really know what we're going to do, but we'll think of something. Also in the comments section on RNO and on the Facebook page as well, you can get in touch with us. On with the show, and I think the two main topics that we're going to discuss are the two most recent things that happened. We just came off of watching MLS Cup. So we're going to discuss that. We're going to go over our general thoughts and then get into a deeper discussion about what the whole narrative was. And also the World Cup draw. There's some interesting groups that came down. We're going to talk about that in general and also look at the CONCACAF perspective. So let's start off with MLS Cup. And I'll throw it to Ian first, and then Aaron can respond after. What are your general thoughts on the game?
Well, my general thoughts were, you know, we're looking at two of the worst names in all of MLS, but it was close. Who is worse, Real Salt Lake or Sporting Kansas City? And much like the match, it was neck and neck. all the way through the game. And Sporting Kansas City comes out on top. And PKs, I mean, it's fitting that it was the 10th penalty kick to determine who has the worst team name. Yes, it's Sporting Kansas City. And you know, as a segue, just a little, I'm going to take a little left turn here because I'm going to plant the seed with the MLS expansion coming up. And we know we have Orlando City.
Yeah.
Brace yourself, guys, for AC Miami. I'm staking a claim on that one. Get ready for it. Right then and there. But you know what? I would say that was probably one of the more enjoyable, dramatic, I would say, MLS Cups I can think of in a while. The last couple haven't been great, and the action has been amazing. And even though this game, of course, you're playing on a frozen pitch and all that, but to go down to the 10th penalty kick?
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, that was exciting. Yeah. And the kick itself, I mean, that was, you know, is it going to hit the crossbar and go in? It's like, you know, went straight down and out, and you're like, oh, man. Could have seen the keepers, Aaron.
Yeah, it almost came down to your boy, Jimmy Nielsen.
Oh, you know who I finally figured it out? He's Richard Simmons in goal. with his pink fitness shirt hanging out over his gut. All he needed, if he was wearing short shorts, it would have been done.
Yeah, well, no, I agree. Maybe not the Nelson thing, but it was funny because I was having an argument last week that he should have been goalie of the year, so I feel out of place. But no, I thought the key tonight's game was is you had two evenly matched opponents. And because of that, if you look at the final statistics where you have about 35 shots, you have 40 fouls, and this is one of the things that's missing. You know, one of the issues is when we want to see good teams, is you see teams dominate other teams. And so it doesn't create a good game. And you can get the greatest games by having two equally qualified teams, teams who are aware of each other, teams who know each other's strengths. And then the other thing that I loved about tonight's game was that the key players for each team shone. You know, you had Zuzi, other than the missed penalty kick, he was predominantly the most dominant player for KC through the whole game. You had Morales, who did some, you know, really cool passes and stuff like that and almost hit that chip that would have not put the game into or would have ended the game before the extra time.
And Saborio, too.
Saborio with the goal. So, yeah. So, I think it was a good, you know, I thought it was a good spotlight of the MLS and show what the MLS can provide.
The main things that I took away from the game was it was really physical. I think that was a talking point coming into it because in the only meeting between the two during MLS that had like a million fouls and like sendings off and everything like that. I think that just carried over. Like there was a lot of bad tackles and just physical plays and comings together with the ref needing to intervene and things like that. But also the pressing style of Kansas City kind of shone through, I think. I think that's the main staple of what their team's about. And I think that was on full display. I think they kind of, not to get all tactics nerd on everybody, I think when their forwards pressed, it kind of made their center backs need to come from a deeper position and play the ball out from a deeper position. And they're not really good at playing the ball out anyway, like Nat Borchers and Chris Schuler. More Nat Borchers than Chris Schuler. They're not good with the ball at their feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things. And also, when Oriol Rossell went off
really
early, I think that kind of changed the game. I think Aaron remarked during the game when we were watching it that why are they playing
like three
defensive midfielders? Yeah. I think Rossell is kind of in charge of setting the tempo to things.
Sure.
And with him going off and Olam going in, I think that kind of screwed up.
Yeah, well, you could tell that these two teams knew each other. And to counter your point in terms of Sporting KC's strategy, I would say Real Salt Lake, knowing Sporting KC's style, started Finley, probably maybe even too late, but had Plata playing later into the game and knew that they were available for the counterattack. And if in a couple of situations they were given the counterattack and missed a clear opportunity that could have changed the game and not send it to overtime. But yeah, you could, you know, again, it just shows, you know, to be positive about the MLS, it shows the development and the understanding that they're aware of each other. They know what they provide. And part, you know, you could argue that this is part of the 28 days or the big break in between and all that. They had the opportunity to do this. But at the same time, you know, you're looking at teams who know what each other's you know, does. And I think that played a role.
But I also think that's, I mean, that's credit to, when we're circling back to Roselle going, I mean, that's credit to Kansas City and Vermes as well, that, you know, they didn't panic. You know, they slotted in and things continued as business. They didn't, he wasn't like, oh man, we got to change everything up. We got to switch up our formation. We got to make things different. It was like, no, you know what? We got our game plan. We practice this. So one guy goes out, we'll just slot this other guy in and we'll continue along. It's a long game. And we saw that. I mean, there was a point where we thought, you know, I thought it looked like, man, Real Salt Lake's got us in the bag. They're looking good and Kansas City's not doing anything, but it's like, you know, it's the old school 15-round championship boxing match. You know, it's just like until that last bell sounds, the other team's still in it, especially at 1-0. So that's, and they got that goal back on a set piece. It wasn't even an open play. So that just shows the dynamism that these two teams had for themselves, that, you know, as long as they were earning those fouls and getting those set pieces, Kansas City was still in the game.
I think, yeah, that's true. And two other...
Thanks, I appreciate that, Jamal. It is true, man.
Two other quick things that I noticed about the game, that Kyle Beckerman was probably my player of the game, even though Aurelien Collin got MVP. I know.
Aurelien, he scored two goals. You know what? That's actually probably not... That's probably pretty fair. He did score both goals, in quotes, you know what I mean?
But for me, I mean, like... I know they lost the game, but I'd probably give it, not MVP, but just like my player of the game. Mm. It's Kyle Beckerman. And also Ian's boy, Jimmy Nielsen, was just horrible. He's just absolutely horrible.
Yeah, what we should do is have like sound bites, like when we're watching a game together, and we can like slip them in here to see all the stuff I was saying in the game, because I just could not get over it. Come on, people got to be with me on this. There was plays where it looked like it was really difficult for him to move left or right to do any. It just looked so uncoordinated. And then it was through the game where I was like, "That's it. It's Richard Simmons, man. That's exactly who he's thinking. His shirt's untucked. It's pink. It's just like, come on, absurd."
Yeah.
Anyways.
Anyway, transitioning out of that, one of the
please let's do that.
Transition out of Jimmy Nielsen, but one of the main talking points before the game, like in the build up to the game, was about two small market teams meeting in MLS Cup. The question I'm racking my brain about is whether it's a good thing or bad thing for MLS. I'll throw it to Aaron first.
I think the answer is both. I think that when you restrict, you know, the greatest example of this is the Oakland A's in baseball. But when you have restrictions, you are much smarter in terms of your development and how you go forward. And to add on to what Ian was saying earlier, I thought throughout the whole year, even at the beginning of the year, that both these teams had the most depth in the league. And to add to that is that they had depth in positions that they knew they need depth in. They just didn't have a bunch of players on the bench. And as we mentioned, when they missed the defensive midfielder got injured, they had another defensive midfielder on the bench. Alternatively, it's difficult to judge the quality of game today, and if they were playing, certainly if they're playing against a Premier League team, you know, look more like a Division I or Division II game. If this game was against a Mexican team opposed to the Champions League, I don't know if a Mexican team would be able to break away from the grittiness and more dominate the game and certainly control the game more. So realistically, if you have if you have Seattle into the game, or New York or Los Angeles, the skill of those DPs might change the complexion of the game. You might not have a better game per se, but you might have more higher skill plays.
I think you're right. There is a yes and no side. But I mean, from my perspective, yes. Like, I thought it was awesome that there was these two small market teams in the finals, because it demonstrates a lot of things in terms of, you know, having a, you know, even playing field, all that stuff that they talk about in MLS and everything sort of being equal more or less. As an existing fan of the league, yeah, I thought it was great because I know this league. I know what teams are good and are exciting, and it's not New York always in LA. But, you know, at the halftime, we heard Garber talking, and one little thing that he slipped in there about the growth of the league and salaries, he mentioned TV ratings. Yeah. And I'd be interested to know what the ratings are of this game compared to, say, when LA made the finals 2 years ago and Beckham finally lifted the cup, sure, or what they would have been had New York made it to the finals this year. I would probably think you know, Don Garber would have been way more excited. As, and I'm sure we all know this, you know, I mean, back to when Ray also like won it the first time, you know, he was jonesing for LA and Chicago because he could have had, A, those are two massive markets, and B, yeah, you have Blanco against Beckham. But this time there really wasn't the big name, right? That, you know, Joe MLS fan could hang their hat on and say, oh yeah, like I know what's up and these are the guys. So I think there's two sides to it. I personally thought I would rather see this a lot of the times than just seeing the one big name out there and watching them lift the cup.
And I would add to your point, I would say in terms of what would be interesting is I never had a chance to do this yet, but to look at the social network response and to see if people, because I imagine if you're a fan of the MLS and you're a season ticket holder for a team here, and you see these players and teams come into your home stadium, that this would excite you. You know, that seeing Zuzi play well, seeing Morales play well, seeing Kansas City and Salt Lake would play well would be great. You know, I don't think it would add anything to someone who just turned on, it's their first soccer game ever. And that's the comparison. I would say the game, unfortunately, the game just reminded me the most, and not to say it wasn't exciting, but it was a relegation battle at the end of the season in the EPL or something like that. Two teams who are fighting for their lives to succeed, but are not, you know.
Yeah, it's tough too because, you know, like someone, a lot of people like us or anyone out there would have started today by, I watched Liverpool beat West Ham and I saw the sickest plays from Suarez and then we switch over to the MLS Cup Finals. So I think that's a point to consider as well.
I think I agree with a lot of what you both said. In the short term, where the league sits right now, I think this is a celebration of what really MLS is. I think the way I would answer this question, I'd kind of answer it with another question. And that question is, if you were to package MLS up and sell it as a product, what is the main selling point? And for me, as the league sits right now, this is what it is. It's two small market teams. They built their teams the right way. They did their scouting properly. They stayed within the cap. It ticks all the boxes in that regard. I think long term, you can't sell this.
Yeah.
I think long term, the things that you would sell are rivalries. And I think MLS does a good job of that with the local rivalries, Cascadia Cup and all that kind of stuff.
I would say the regions do that better than the league. Just to cut in there. It's true. I mean, they're capitalized on it and that's the right thing to do. But I think the most credit needs to go to the supporters in each of those cities first supporters. And foremost. Yeah. Sure. Before we would say
you have the whole MLS buying or advertising. Yeah,
taking they take Cascadia, right? They took it from them and started to like
anyway, I don't wanna dig too deep into that and get people pissed off and everything.
Who cares?
That's true.
Did you not listen to your own intro?
That's true. I mean we don't care. But anyway, so rivalries but also star power. I mean but look at this realistically. There were no stars here. Swissy is like an MLS star. He just came up, but there was no Landon Donovan. There was no Clint Dempsey. There was no Thierry Henry. No Robbie Keane. Also, dynasties. I think that's a big thing in sports in general.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at, especially North American sports, but even soccer, you look at the teams that have won title after title after title. For whatever reason, I mean, you might be a fan of that team and like that they win all the time, or you might hate them and say, fuck this team, they win too much, I hate them. But that's a big selling point. And that kind of transitions into the fourth point. Teams that are considered hated or considered villains sell.
No, just to your point there, I think this season was kind of interesting that most likely you're not going to get this type of final again. You're not going to get two equally small marketed teams in the final. And as you can see, I think the 2013 was certainly a transition year. And you see certain teams, you know, trying to improve, trying to boost their salaries and things like that. But one of the things this did show is that you're not going to just be able to buy a DP and automatically be the top team in the league, which might have been the case in a few years previous. You know, there's a reason why Los Angeles, there's a reason why Seattle, there's a reason why New York lost in the playoffs. It's because they're a worse team than these two teams in the final.
Yeah, you know, another thing to add on is that we didn't touch on earlier when you're talking about, you know, the types of players. And there's one thing to be said about, you know, are you buying stars or are you developing stars? And maybe that's maybe more of the model that we saw with these two teams. And not, I don't want to say necessarily developing stars, but even when you're DPs, these like Savorio wasn't bought as a DP. He was graduated into a DP. You know what I mean? And that's maybe a another way to build your team is that you go and get a guy at a reasonable rate, has a great season, two seasons, then you, you know, pony up and pay him $400,000 to $750,000. Even then, you're not spending $1 million on them. You're just going just over the limits. So I think that's another to consider about the league moving forward.
And just to add to Kamel's point about not stars or stars needing to sell games, can we develop stars in the MLS? Can Zuzi become a star? You know, there's a few times I was watching him tonight, and he reminded me of a Pirlo in an Italian game where he's dominating with the ball, he's doing all the crosses, he's doing everything. So, you know, as we progress as a soccer nation, a soccer audience, does he become a star?
Yeah, that's all good stuff. I think we're going to let us know your thoughts on this topic. I mean, what do you think about the small market MLS Cup? Yeah, just the MLS Cup in general. How did you enjoy it and everything? But the second topic we wanted to discuss was something that happened on Friday, which is the World Cup draw. I think we have some exciting groups here. And just to go, we're going to quickly just run through each group. Group A has Brazil, Croatia, Mexico, and Cameroon. Group B has Spain, Netherlands, Chile, and Australia. Group C has Colombia, Greece, Ivory Coast, and Japan. Group D has Uruguay, Costa Rica, England, and Italy. Group E has Switzerland, Ecuador, France, and Honduras. Group F has Argentina, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Iran, and Nigeria. And Group G has Germany, Portugal, Ghana, USA, and Group H, to round it off, has Belgium, Algeria, Russia, and South Korea. What are some of our general thoughts on this? And we can make this kind of quick.
Okay. Just looking at the overall draw, to me, it looks like an Argentina-Brazil final. Not only because I thought it was going to be an Brazil-Argentina final.
All the way to the final?
Before it.
No, Bill, this is Aaron here. It goes right for the goal.
But the way the thing is set up, both those two teams have a fairly easy first round. And I think one of the significant things, because I was looking, there's a lot of talk about England's group, is the travel distance that's going to regard Brazil. Brazil is, you know, it's only comparable in terms of size to Russia and the United States. And so teams are going to be doing six-hour flights between games, going into very small cities in Brazil and having to adapt to, and some of the cities, you know, there's a city that I believe the Italy-England game is at, Moreiras or something like
Manaus
that.
Manaus or something like that.
And at that time of the year, it's 38 degrees Celsius is the average temperature. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a lot of adapting for teams to do. And that's why I think, you know, again, I thought this prior, but I thought the South American teams were going to do better. But then also the way it was drawn, too. Like most of Argentina and Brazil games are in Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo.
Yeah, you know, when we did our sort of roundtable thing, that I usually save this for the first day to talk about the weather. But that was something that I kind of highlighted and knew going into this tournament was going to be a major factor. And especially when it came to the CONCACAF teams, because there's two, I guess you could say three countries that I think would benefit from these hot weather games. And then, of course, the U.S. that was going to be hindered significantly by it. And those are the things that when I was looking through these groups, the four groups of CONCACAF teams that was going to play a factor into all their games. And you see it. You see it in the matchup that it will make a difference in a lot of them.
Yeah, I'm not a meteorologist, so I'm going to stay away from all the weather and climate. Some of the general thoughts I had was Group C was looking like the most interesting group to me until Greece joined the party. I mean, you have Colombia, Ivory Coast, and Japan, and then you have Greece. That's the equivalent of you have all these attractive people at a party, and then you have that guy nobody invited just come and just...
Nobody wants there.
Nobody wants Greece. Sorry to the Greek fans and all over Toronto.
Sorry, Danforth. We like to go to dinner there.
Nobody want your team in that group. But also, y'all are going to think I'm crazy for saying this, but I like CONCACAF's chances outside of the United States. Other than the United States, I like CONCACAF's chances. And that transitions into a question I have. What is considered successful for CONCACAF?
Initially, I thought, well, I think Mexico can get out of the Brazil group because I don't think Croatia and Cameroon are overly strong. But the interesting thing about the USA, which I originally, when I saw the group and I was concerned for, and I'm still slightly concerned for, but I noticed that they're the only CONCACAF team that doesn't have a South American team in their group. And I think we have to give a plus one to all the South American teams. Just because, South American soccer is very much a league unto itself, right? Like, they play 18-game qualifications for World Cups. They play Copa Americas. So for those players, this is to all of them, it's a home game compared to, you know, what they usually do on their normal days and stuff like that. So for me, you know, I think Uruguay is going to be strong in Costa Rica's group. I think Ecuador might be strong in Honduras' group. You know, Brazil is certainly going to be strong. I think it's the other two weak teams there. And for United States, it's, you know, you don't know what you're going to get out of Ghana. You don't know what you're going to get out of the African teams in this. You know, the heats might be beneficial to them. It's difficult to always judge them. So yeah, no, I think it's going to be the one interesting thing with the USA is there's a large German population in Brazil, and there's a large Portuguese population in Brazil, and with Ronaldo with Brazil, so I can guarantee you USA is going to go as the bad guy in almost every single game, and that might have an added influx.
I would say, to circle back to your question, I think for CONCACAF, just to get out of the group would be considered success. I mean, the real success they should be striving for, I think, is the next round, getting into the quarterfinals. But it's really tough. And when you look at Group A, how bad Mexico's been in the last year, but there is an opportunity there big time, because Cameroon, the funny thing is, Scolari came on just over a year ago as the head coach for Brazil, and he's the most experienced, like, with his national team. Mexico and Croatia both hired their coach within the last month, and Cameroon has only had theirs since May. So there's a chance there for them to get out. And if they, you know, finally buck up and start playing to the potential they have, they have a chance. And then I know, Kamal, in that article you mentioned Honduras, but of all the matches up, when I'm doing my meteorology, they actually have a massive disadvantage because their first game is in Porto Alegre, which is going to be a nice, cool 20 degrees thereabouts, and they're playing France. So France should be more than comfortable playing in that game and not be affected by the heat. And that'll be too bad for Honduras, because that probably was their big advantage.
Again, I'm not a meteorologist. I'm not worried about the weather too much.
I think people
are making a little too much of this whole weather thing.
Well, I think in just on the kind of CONCACAF angle, in previous Copa Americas, CONCACAF teams have been invited to participate. And unfortunately, USA ignores it or brings horrible teams down there. But Costa Rica and Mexico have gone and have actually been quite successful. And because Mexico also plays domestically in the Copa Libertadores, again, I think they're going to have a fan base. I think they're going to have a comfortability with it. And you could argue that Mexico is connected more to South America than it is to North America.
And I just want to throw out really two pretty interesting matchups. There's actually one there. Brazil and Mexico will be replaying their Confederations Cup game almost in the exact same spot a year to the date that Brazil won 2-0. So that'll be interesting to see where those teams have come in a year's time. And then the other one that I don't know how many people highlight, because you kind of forget about Uruguay going to so far in the last World Cup, but they barely qualified. They had to go to a playoff against Costa Rica, and that's the opening game of the round, Costa Rica against Uruguay, two teams that had to go head-to-head to get into the 2010, and of course Costa Rica loses out after going to the previous two World Cups, and that's their only one they've missed out on, was against Uruguay.
Yeah,
kaboom! That's some knowledge dropped on your head.
Wow,
that's bar talk for you.
Call us back in June.
So anyway, for me, I think what's considered successful is if none of these teams get absolutely pummeled. I mean, if they lose like 3-0, 4-0, that's not really good for CONCACAF. But also the other thing is, I think other than the United States, three out of the four of these teams will get out of their group. I think Mexico will finish behind Brazil in Group A. I think Honduras will finish behind Ecuador in Group E. And Costa Rica is kind of the sticking point. But England, fuck England, man. They're not even good. Who cares about England? And then I think Italy will finish top, and then it's out of Uruguay and Costa Rica, and I think Costa Rica can kind of nip them a little bit.
Yeah, I think Uruguay is definitely, again, like, they barely made it this time, they barely made it last time. I I think this time their luck might not run out, or they will run out. That's what I think. Like, I don't think they're going to have that dream run like they had last time.
Sure. I would differ to some extent, only because Uruguay has shown success in previous South America World Cups and in previous Copa Americas, and showed that they're not afraid of playing against Brazil and Argentina and things
so
like that.
So are you saying you want to bet me?
I'll throw it out there. I'll take you on the bet. Although I do think USA can go through.
I will throw out this bet officially to the two of you.
All right, I say
those three teams will get out of their group. If I win, you both owe me a pint.
All right.
There you go.
If you win, I owe you both.
Although you have to go on the mic after the pint.
That's fine. I'll eat crow if it doesn't happen.
But I think personally, another interesting question regarding the World Cup is what happens if no CONCACAF teams make it, or what happens if USA doesn't get by the first round, or what happens if USA loses the first three games? Because I think a lot of this, and I think we would all say that the 2013 soccer season was a great season, not Canada wise, but for North America in general, and I think, you know, with the MLS. But I think also that was U.S.'s qualifying through to the World Cup, the game in the snow and all this kind of stuff that kept the crowd.
The support was
interested.
Good, too. Yeah, that's the other thing. Sam's Army and like the American supporter for this team through the tournament, those games were fun to watch. I mean, the crowd, just watching the crowd in the stadium, it was probably one of the best, you know, as I've a casual observer of the U.S. national team, that's probably some of those games looked more intense than I've ever seen.
And I would say, you know, to bring it back to Canadian perspective, and I'll say we are the more intelligent soccer fan than the American fan, personally. No, I think that reflects in the success of America. We can separate ourselves from the failure of our national team and still love the beautiful game for the beautiful game. I think a lot of people in the U.S. support soccer because of the success of U.S. in it. And if U.S. fails, then it certainly has an input on terms of U.S.'s interest.
So I think all of this brings up another interesting question. Okay, so whatever we quantify success for CONCACAF to be, do we think it's a good thing or bad thing for MLS?
I would say I think it's a good thing. I mean, we were kind of touching on this through the game where it's like, you know, some of these, like the Central American countries, and to an extent, I mean, not this time, but like the Caribbean nations as well. I mean, a lot of them, their first step out of their national domestic leagues are to MLS. And if those guys go on to do well at the World Cup, I think that reflects well on the league. And if it's not the US and say a Costa Rica, Honduras, or Mexico goes far, I guess Mexico obviously to a lesser extent, but let's say Costa Rica or Honduras even gets out of that first round into the quarterfinals and Saborio's the guy who's scoring the winning goal. I mean, that. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's a connection because now everyone in the world is watching that team go far, and that guy plays in MLS.
Yeah, and I think in general, the World Cup, even though soccer's followed closely by most of the world, the influx of interest for the World Cup compared to anything else is great. So certainly, you know, if an MLS player succeeds or is a standout player in the World Cup, his value will certainly go up drastically, and you could sell them and stuff like that. Now, there is a concern there, because if too many guys are doing too well, it could deplete the quality of the league. And then, of course, the always great question in terms of the is what happens if USA does extraordinarily well? What happens if USA makes a semis, even potentially gets to a final? Then it's soccer world all over the place. It's a crazy place, right? So you know, there's always the hope. And 1996, the reason why the MLS exists is because of the relation to the 94 World Cup. And, you know, it's funny because we're talking about the MLS comparing to the EPL in 2022. I remember conversations and meetings by head office people in the MLS in 96 who said in the next 15 years, the next 20 years, we're going to win a World Cup. So it shows, number one, the fantasy of American soccer, but it also shows how important it is to them and how they develop their structure and everything like that.
To go off your point of if MLS loses a lot of players to other leagues, it could deplete the quality of the league itself. I think that, yes, in the short term, maybe you lose one player or maybe three or four players, but in these play in that country's home nation. So, like, let's put Mexico to one side because all their players are from Liga MX. Who cares about Liga MX? But who cares about it? Who cares? Let's talk about Honduras and Costa Rica, for example. You would look at players from their domestic league, say, hey, he went to MLS. He used that as a stepping stone get to Europe.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Let's go the same route. So you might lose 3 or 4 players, but you might gain 10 or 20 players.
You're going to get thousands of youngsters, right? The argument. You just expanded probably the potential, let's say in quotes, of those guys, young players filling their boots exponentially.
Yeah. Well, and one of the arguments that the MLS can claim is, I would say CONCACAF as a soccer has been better because of the MLS. And I think that was noticeable how competitive these smaller countries were with the last Gold Cup, and to give you the impression that they'll do well in the World Cup.
And another thing to go off the back of that is, I will forever think of MLS as a feeder league. That is how they're going to make their money. I mean, beyond television ratings and whatever, because television ratings for MLS suck right now, let's be honest. Like, they're horrible. Just look at, you know, Canada's playing curling on TSN instead. Curling. But anyway.
Curling gets good numbers. It's 71. That was one of the first games of the MLS season, right? When Toronto FC was playing. It was Vancouver, and we were watching.
And we were waiting for Saskatchewan curling to win the friggin' game. And
hurry hard!
Anyway, so... So I'll forever look at MLS as a feeder league. I mean, that's how they're going to make their money. It's a good thing for MLS to be a feeder. I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't understand Don Garber's proclaiming we want to be one of the best leagues by 2020. It's too vague, and I don't understand quite what that means. But
the Netherlands are a feeder league, you could say.
Portugal is a feeder league. Yeah. France is a feeder league, and they're successful.
They have grilling. They have. If I was living in those countries, I would go to those games. I would be excited to see.
Spain is a feeder league. There's a bunch of leagues that are feeder leagues that are fine.
Spain's a feeder league. The Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Well, in reality, is we could be a feeder league to New York City FC and LA Galaxy.
That's true as well. You know, interesting, and yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. No, I think it's, yeah, you know, it's again. I think. You know, certainly for later podcasts, this is should be an ongoing conversation, an ongoing debate. In terms of the league, I think it's an ongoing conversation, an ongoing debate. And part of it is realistically understanding the quality of what you have. And understanding, you know, as I said, we were mentioned this during the program. But, you know, the biggest issue in North America is in 99% of these countries that play soccer, people are born wanting to play soccer professionally. And we still have only a very small percentage of people who want to do that. So it's difficult. I think eventually we can get there, but right now it's hard to say, oh, we can be Portugal or we can be Holland, because it's, you know, just not realistic at this present moment. But
I'll throw it out to you guys. What do you guys think? What do you consider successful for CONCACAF in the World Cup? And is success, whatever that success is in CONCACAF, do you think it's good and bad for MLS? Leave us your thoughts. But I think we'll wrap this show up we'll have a little bit of fun towards the end of this show. And to get back to the World Cup draw, let's select our teams who we think are going
to
advance.
I guess mine are already taken, right? Yeah. So you guys have to go somewhere else. I'll give a wild card. My wild card, just because I've already mentioned, I do think Brazil-Argentina to the final.
No, not who's going to win it. I mean the group winners. Who's going to advance out of each group?
Holy shit.
I don't have all.
Yeah, I have the CONCACAF ones here. Yeah, we can do this.
Well, I'll name the groups.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's do a rapid fire.
Okay. Yeah,
do a rapid fire and fire it off. Okay, go.
Okay. Group A, Brazil, Croatia, Mexico, Cameroon.
Brazil, Mexico.
Yeah, same with me. Brazil, Mexico. Group B, Spain, Netherlands, Chile, Australia.
Netherlands, Chile.
Oh, I'm going to say Spain and Chile. You got 3 seconds. Just go.
What the hell did FIFA? What the hell did Australia ever do to
no
FIFA?
No thinking last. Just go for it.
Okay. Chile finished first. Spain finished second. Group C, Colombia, Greece, Ivory Coast, Japan.
Colombia, Japan.
Colombia, Ivory Coast.
Yeah, Colombia, Ivory Coast.
Going with the weather on that one, guys.
Sorry, Japan. I love you guys, but... Yeah. Group D, Uruguay, Costa Rica, England, Italy.
Uruguay, Italy.
Italy, Costa Rica.
Italy, Costa Rica.
Well. You have to say. You already
Italy,
said three.
Italy, Costa Rica
All right.
as well.
You got two of your CONCACAF teams.
Relax, man.
Just keep making sure you stay on point.
I will. I'm just reading. All right. Group E, Switzerland, Ecuador, France, Honduras.
You're wide open.
I have Uruguay, Honduras.
Ecuador, France.
Yeah, I'm going to go with, France and Ecuador.
Yeah, I have Ecuador, Honduras. Group F, Argentina, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Iran, Nigeria.
Argentina, Nigeria.
Yeah, Argentina, Nigeria.
I have Argentina, Bosnia. I know it's their first time there, but I'm going to go with them.
Sure.
Group G, what is this, the group of death, I guess? Germany, Portugal, Ghana, USA.
Portugal, Germany.
Germany, Ghana.
Yeah, Germany, Ghana.
Portugal's
well.
Shit, man. They're shit. They're not going through.
They're home. They're going back
no,
home.
No, see, man. I offended one part of Toronto with Greece. Now you're offending another part of Toronto with Portugal.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Finally, Group H, Belgium, Algeria, Russia, South Korea.
Belgium, South Korea.
Yeah, I got the same Belgium, South Korea.
Sure, why not?
And I think Belgium is my dark horse in terms of the third or potential. I like my final four are Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, and Belgium.
Yeah, I need to see the brackets.
I'm sticking with it, like we said in the round table. I think Colombia's got a little bit of a dark horse feel to them, and I think they could pull it off.
I mean, I think Argentina, without seeing how everything would shake out, everybody's saying Argentina has the easiest ride to the final and everything. So I'm going to go with them. And I mentioned them in the round table, so I'll stick with them. But I don't know who they're going to face and all that stuff. But we're going to wrap up the podcast there. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm excited to be bringing you this. I hope we can have more discussions like this in the future. Let me hear your thoughts. I'll leave you my Twitter account again. You can get a hold of me directly at Kamal Hilton on Twitter, also in the comment section on Red Nation Online's website and on the Facebook page. And you guys can share your how they can get a hold of you and everything.
I am EMB Sports on Twitter.
I'm at Clark RNO.
All right. Well, until next time, hope you guys enjoyed it and cheers.